So, Rabbi, it had nothing to do with anything. Rabbi Chaim Chait, who's a tzaddik, went ahead and sent me a sefer from Eretz Yisrael, a very interesting sefer. It's called Yad of Emuna. There's actually three volumes. It's about Rav Chatzko Levinson. He was in three different yeshivas. He was in Europe, before World War II, he was in Kelm. So volume number one is about Rav Chatzko in Kelm. Then, during World War II, he was in Shanghai in the Mir. And then, after the war, he was in Panovich. So there's three volumes.
Didn't he go to Klotsk at some point with Harar?
Maybe, yes. So that's probably in volume one in there. Anyway, so in this sefer about Rav Chatzko, he brings a very interesting ma'isa which relates to this week's parsha. Okay, so now this ma'isa comes from, it was printed up in the, I think the Modiah, in Tavshin Ayin Dawid. Tavshin Ayin Dawid, that's around, what are we now? So, yeah, so 10 years ago it was printed in one of these newspapers in Israel. So this ma'isa. Apparently they heard the ma'isa from the person it happened to. So I don't want to read it too much inside, but there was a bacher who came from Seattle, Washington to New York. His name was Rav Chaim Luban. What?
Is everybody related?
Yeah. Anyway. What? So, it sounds this right.
How does it spell?
Yeah.
How does it pronounce it?
Okay, so I'll read this story. So, cause I heard this story about 50 times. So, my father was learning in New York, and he was, but this is the story here. So, he was staying at a friend's house. His friend's name was Gnauer. Let's see if I got the name right. His name was Gennaro from Seattle, Washington. Anyone knows Gennaro from Seattle, Washington?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So he was staying at his friend Gennaro. Let's see what his first name was. And his friend told him that the Mir Yeshiva just came from, they landed in San Francisco, I think. And they came from the other side, from the Pacific Ocean. And then they went from the Pacific, they came to New York, and they were staying somewhere, I forgot where he told me they were staying, so I forgot, and it doesn't say here where they were staying. So they were staying in Far Rockaway, I don't remember where he said. So he was staying at Gnauer, and they lived in that near that neighborhood. So he says, let's go to the Mir Yeshiva, to there where they're staying. They're staying in some hotel, and we'll hear the shmooze from Rav Chatzko. So they went ahead, and they... Far Rockaway, that's right. He says here also. So they walked a nice distance because they wanted to get there and die for the schmooze. Says here 2 kilometers. And sure enough, they got there and they missed the schmooze. So they went ahead and they had a shtickle chutzpah. And they went over to Rav Chatzko. And they asked him if he could tell them over the schmooze. They missed it. If he could tell it over. So he said that Rav Chatzko said they had a little teeny table, like a picnic table. And Rav Chatzko sat on one side, and these two American bachrim on the other side. And Rav Chatzko told him the following shmooze. It says in this week's parsha, "Va'ata tetzaves bnei Yisrael v'yikodach Hashemin zayis zoch kosis lamor." So kosis means that it's pressed. Means that they put something very heavy on or something and it pressed out the oil. So Rav Chatzko said that you see here that if you want to get the pure oil out of something, you gotta press it. You gotta, pressure. Tsaris almost. And then he said basically what he was saying was that you look around. You see all these guys. My father says, looks around. He sees all these skinny guys. He says, they came from Shanghai. They were pressured. So that's why they're all going to become Gedolim, because they were under pressure. So that brought out their greatness. But you, too, lived in America, and you had a life of enjoyment. So how in the world are you going to become Gedolim? No, that was his Chatzko's time against him. that you had too many little easy. Life is too easy. When life is too easy, you don't feel pressure. When you don't feel pressure, then you don't work. And you don't work, you're never going to become anything. Afkaz was very sharp. He was a very demanding person. So he basically what his shmuz was, that you don't, to get the oil, the poor oil, you got to be pressed. So all these guys got pressed. But you, living in America all these years, you were, you know, enjoying life while they were in Shanghai. And so how in the world are you ever going to become anything? So you better make sure to press yourself. That was basically what he said. I mean, how they could do it.
You're learning all day.
So what's Tysha's question? What's Tysha's answer? But you're by definition doing that. If you don't feel there's a fire under you, you don't feel pressure. You don't feel it's a chazar, right? Is that a chumash over there? It says, where the pasuk in by Parshas Para, that's Chukas. It says, Adam ki yamas ba'alo, and what's the Rashi say, which is a Gemara? Tyrus says, "Ain't a Tyrus nickness? Zois Tyrus Adam ki yamas ba'ayo." That's the pasuk. Those are Torah, Adam ki yamas ba'ayo. Says Rashi. I assume it's a Rashi. It's not a Rashi. Okay. I'm wrong again. But ain't a Torah nickness? Adam and Misha may miss Asmo. So it says, if you want to learn Torah, if you're just enjoying life, easy, drinking your coffee while you're learning, you'll never be successful in Torah. Doesn't mean you can't be a little bit, but ain't a Torah necklace etam yamis asma. Now, it doesn't mean you're supposed to actually put yourself in sakana, because there's a pasuk, the chayvahem. So you're not supposed to risk your life for a mitzvah. But you have to basically give up your life. It means you give up all your luxuries and all your pleasures. You just focus. You know, it makes a very big difference.
Were these people happy?
I don't know. I hope they were happy. You want to know in Shanghai? I don't know. I hope so.
What does that mean? There was a pressure. What was the pressure before?
It wasn't. They weren't. They didn't have good gashmias. Shanghai was. You spoke to the people who lived in Shanghai. My mother-in-law grew up in Shanghai, just for the record. She didn't come with her. She came with the. She ran away from Germany before in 1938. And they ran away to Shanghai, 1937. And they lived in Shanghai for like 10 years. Shanghai was a miserable place. It was hot. It was buggy. It was sick. There was starvation. It was not a nice place. And it was obviously better than the concentration camps, but not that much better. Mm-hmm. It was a horrible place to live. And they went ahead, and in this yeshiva, with no air conditioning, and this boiling hot heat, and the mosquitoes, and everything else, and not enough food, and with the Japanese, you know, whatever, and Japanese were not such nice people, in the, you know, Gestapo there, whatever it was a Japanese Gestapo. So they went in and they learned with tremendous mesiras nefesh. So that means that they forgot about, you know, all Adam Haza. They're just focusing on learning. Rav Chatzkel said, I heard the same thing from the almost exact same word that Rav Chatzkel said. I heard this from Rav Zuckerman, but from just a different angle. Zuckerman asked the following question. He said, a very interesting question. He said, almost all the Talmidim from the Mir Yeshiva, we came Gedolim. You know, anyone, if you meet anyone who's an Alter Mir, all the Alter Mirs were pretty chashuv people. I don't say every single one. I'm sure there's an exception to the rule. But just come out, all the, what's called the Alter Mirs, came out very, very chashuv people. He said, today, there are so many people learning in yeshivas. He was in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, very, very small percentage amount to some become anything really chashuv. So he says, why is it that in the Europe, he didn't say about the Mir, he says in general, in Europe had less people learning than we have today. there was a smaller percentage of people, you know, compared to, they have the thousands and thousands of people that are in. And he says, and yet the majority of them came out gedolim. And today we have thousands and thousands of people, and we're mass producing mediocrity. That was Rav Zuckerman's question, except he didn't use such fancy English. But that was his question, that in Europe they produce yechidim, they had a smaller number of people at the yeshiva, and they produce a high percentage of gedolim. And in America, in Israel, we have many, many more people going to yeshiva, much higher percentage, and we're getting mediocrity. And he gave the same answer. He said, because in Europe, when you went to yeshiva, there was tremendous mesiras nefesh. Just even my father, who was in America, he was from Seattle. He said he was in yeshiva for 7 years. He went home once for, you know, in 7 years. Because he couldn't, it was expensive to go home. I'm not tiny. Saying in Metzius is that what Zuckerman said, that when you went to yeshiva, there was Mesiras Nefesh. Because there was no. Just 1 second. Because you went in what Rav Zuckerman said, you know, I'm getting. There was a known thing that in the mirror they got married very late. Right? They used to call that out the mirror. Used to mean they were called the out because they got married very late. The older mirror. The mirror at Brachim used to get married in the 30s. So I always thought that was the Hashkafa. So Rav Plashinsky, who was a mirror, he was a real mirror, and he used to always try, you know, he used to encourage, whenever we would bring the guys in for a brachas, he would tell them to get married. That was the way, and we weren't so crazy about that, because Shiva did not really think the guys that she got married at 19. So I once asked him, you're a mirror, and the mirror was a shita that they got married in their 30s. So why are you telling people to get married at 19? So he said, I'm wrong. The mirror did not have a sheet that they should get married at 30. They got married at 30s because no one wanted to marry them. Because in Europe, there was no parnasa, and there was no kolos, and there was, if you were learning in yeshiva, you were doomed to be a pauper.
Isn't that
and
what
therefore,
the Mesiras Nefesh
was? What?
Isn't that what the Mesiras
Nefesh was? So that was part of the Mesiras Nefesh. There was Mesiras Nefesh that there were no jobs. There were no destined positions. If you don't, there was like one rough,
like
in
sense,
the,
like
one rough, right?
To learn.
So there was Mesiras Nefesh that there was very little future. What are you going to do for a parnasa? Rav Chanan Vassman, if you read it, said the Akdama was starving. His, you know, basically there was the yeshivas were poor. There was no, there weren't positions or abanas. So there was no, in the, they were very hard to find positions. No girl would look at you. It said in a sefer, it's a funny line, but it said this in a sefer that basically who married the yeshiva guys, usually it was a girl, you know, it says, and I told the guys by Yisro that it says the Kohen Midjan Sheva Banos. So the Raubach says that's why Yisrael married one off to Moshe, because he had 7 daughters. So what can he do? He has so many daughters, she's got to get rid of them. So, you know, Yisrael, Moshe is a foreigner, but he got 7 daughters. Okay. So that's what's said safer, that in Europe, the girls who couldn't find the shidduch, we used to marry yeshiva guys, because they were the, you know. So he says if you saw, got to a point, that if you saw a girl who was limping or was handicapped or something wrong with her, you just assumed that she was married to a yeshiva guy. Because any girl who had a handicap, that's who married the yeshiva guy. So it was a very, you didn't go home, you didn't have food. The yeshivas itself did not have food. Very often there was no meals in the yeshiva. There wasn't such a great future. So, yeah, there was Mesiras Nefesh. So that's what he's saying, that the Mesiras Nefesh, Rav Zuckerman was saying, when a person comes to yeshiva and he knows that, you know, that's it, that you're giving up Olam Haza, so to speak, for yeshiva, and you're pushing yourself, you push yourself, so you take advantage. That makes more sense. But he says, but we don't have that, because if I care, you don't get up. If anything, it's, you know, the yeshiva life is much more enjoyable. Why would anyone want to go work when you can sit in yeshiva and learn, right? In other words, you know, I'm serious. And you have to be, you know, what's the rush to go to work? You can sit in yeshiva, drink coffee, have your friends, go on camping trips. It's a fun. You're surrounded by your friends, you know, and after a while, you start enjoying learning, and you drink coffee, you know, and you schmooze in the dining room. It's a nice life. And your wife goes and works, and your wife supports you. So, okay, eventually, you have to go out to work after 6 years. Okay, you know, it's so much of a, you know, the poor other guy, you know, if you want a college degree, you get yeshiva credits, you don't have to go to college. It's a machaya. So that's what Rav Zuckerman said, and that's what Sandra Hatzko was saying, the same idea, that there's nothing pushing the guys to work hard. So not that there's a taina and a veira, but it's a mitzvah. Psychologically, the fact that you're trained to be push yourself. They say the same thing, that an Israeli soldier, he's taught that you focus, because nothing else, there's nothing else in life.
So, but there is some, we are also doing a siyat, like a Mesiras Nefesh of being in yeshiva.
I didn't say you're not doing a Mesiras. First of all, Mesiras Nefesh is a very, very
strong term.
And it's like used, thrown around. Like, I hate to disappoint you. I don't think you're being Mesiras Nefesh being in yeshiva. You know, if you're in a situation, you know, you're giving up a little bit. We have cake break and ice cream and what we have today. We had, you know, we're muffins. You know, we're serious nefesh. I don't think in most people can say it's serious nefesh. You know, you didn't give up anything. Okay, you gave up, but it's not, to call him a serious nefesh is not a fair term. I'll give you a different example. There was, when I was in Israel, there was someone started, Rabbi Chait was a tzaddik. So Rabbi Chait used to allow other yeshivas to use their base medrash. No, Rav Moshe Chait. That when, David Chait is also a tzaddik, but this was Rav Moshe Chait. Many yeshivas, became chasher yeshivas. They wanted to get started. They have a building. So Rabbi Chait was very generous, and they could use the building. You know, they used that in West Side of Spanish. It was Dvar Yerushalayim, which is a very big yeshiva one time. I remember it started in the yeshiva. Dvar Yerushalayim. It's a yeshiva for Baal Tshuvas from England. What?
Usher gave Shir and Sisha,
yes. That's what I'm getting to. So there was someone started a yeshiva called Tiferet Tzvi. Tiferet Tzvi was a very interesting yeshiva. Is that there's the Israel's a very polarized society. So you have even in the religious world, you have the Haredim, who don't go to the army, and you have the Mizrahi Bnei Akiva yeshivas, where they have Hester. And by them, it's almost like the biggest mitzvah in the world to go to the army. So the Tiferet Tzvi went ahead and made a yeshiva for the guys in Hester who decide that they want to really learn not to go to the army, which was to do that in Israel is a very big mitzvah. That's a mitzvah nefesh. Why is that mitzvah nefesh? First of all, because in Israel, if you don't go to the army, you're not allowed to go to college. If you don't go to the army, you're not allowed to work, just for the record. Ah, you say people work there? Okay, I don't know, it's a kasha, but it's illegal. You're not allowed to work, so except for most jobs, you can't get a normal job if you don't go to the army, because it's illegal to work. It's illegal to leave the country for an extended amount of time. Maybe by now they changed the law a little bit, but in those days, for sure, you couldn't leave the country. There were people who would have to do all kinds of shtick, but without getting into it, they had two passports. I know they had all kinds of ways of doing it, but it wasn't simple. And you could get arrested and you could get in jail. So you go to the army, you weren't allowed to go to college. You can never become a doctor or a lawyer. You couldn't legally work. Plus, if you grew up in that society, you capped out. You know, if just like the people whose kids are in the army, they're all angry at the Haredim who aren't going to the army. Imagine how angry they are to the kid in their kid's class who, my son's in the army and you're his best friend. You camped out and you went in. So that was, it was tremendous. You know, it was such a bizayin. Then their parents were angry at them, their family angry. So they came to yeshiva. So we have this yeshiva called Pharisee, and that's where Rav Asher used to teach. Give a shir to them. Anyway, but the ma'aseh, I'm getting to the point. Rav Asher from the mirror would come in and gave a shir once a week to these guys.
How many guys in the shiva?
I don't know, 15 guys.
Still around?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Pharisee, still there? Okay. I don't know. But he started in the base match. So those guys, they did tremendous. I used to watch them because they were masmidim shein kamayo, and their level, their growth. You know, we had the Chafetz Chaim guys who came in, and their guys came in, and they were roughly the same level. They weren't such big great learners when they came in. They came from Israeli high schools, but at the end of the year, they were way beyond our guys. And look, I think that was Pshat. Not because, I don't think it's because they had better Rebbeim than we had. I don't think so. The Pshat is that their guys were being Meiser Nefesh. They came to Yeshiva with Mesiris Nefesh. They're fighting their parents. They're fighting their friends. They're fighting, when they go home, everyone spits at them and makes fun of them. And so they're coming to Yeshiva, there's Mesiris Nefesh. So, okay, so then they push themselves to make it work. But when there's no Mesiris Nefesh, it's much harder. So I may just get to the last point. So we had one.
How does that lead to growth? Meaning it gives them a meat of
because
being able to push,
yes,
or it's just a natural.
It's two things. One is, since you know that you're giving up so much, so maybe you're motivated. But that, like the guy said, that went to work in Shanghai when your Mesiris Nefesh wasn't your choice. But it's just that you get a mida. We had, I'm wasting time with stories, but there was a, I forgot his name. Maybe Rabbi Morgan remembers his name. There was a person who was the head of the Russian Baal Tshuva movement in Or HaSameach. SS, anyone know?
SS?
No, that's something like that. SS, I don't know, no one knows. He was a famous person. He ran the Or. He does not even say it. It is in Arzei Abira. No, there was someone else. There was the Dvar Yerushalayim's Russian Baal Tshuva person, Yitzhak Zilber, lived in Sanhedrin Mochet. But there was a person who was the head of the Or HaSameach Russian department. Anyway, so he used to speak. We used to have in Israel, for those who know Eretz Yisrael, there's a big Yetzer Sahara that the guys want to go out in town, Motzoi Shabbos, so the yeshiva instead makes Malava Malkas that are mandatory and whatever, and they try to get Choshiva speakers. And
it became optional last year.
Became optional? Oh, okay. Yeah, they obviously they gave up on firing the guys. So we used to have some pretty Choshiva speakers. So this person who was the head of the Russian Department of Or HaSameach, who was a major, one of the refuseniks in Russia, who went ahead and he spoke in the yeshiva. And he was telling his story about how the things he was teaching Torah in Russia. At that time it was Usser. You weren't allowed to teach religion. And he used to give classes, and he was talking how the KGB was spying on him, and the cat and mouse games they used to play, whatever. And the guys kept on asking, but weren't you, how did you do that? What about the KGB? And finally, he got so upset. He says, what's wrong with you guys? Don't you know such a thing called Mesiris Nefesh? if you believe in something, you stand for your principles. Okay, of course I knew I might get arrested by the KGB, but that's what I believed in. And then he told me later, he says he sees this, that Americans don't understand Mesiris Nefesh. They don't have it in them because they never were Meiser Nefesh for anything. So they don't have the ability to even comprehend it, that someone, you were Meiser Nefesh for something you believe in. He says, I get this every time I speak, and there's Americans, they don't understand. He says, the concept of committing yourself for something that you believe in, even when you're, there he was literally risking his life.
Isn't that us, sir?
It's not us. I don't know if they're going to kill him. It was. You could send them to Siberia. I don't know.
That's not us, sir. That
I don't know. I don't know. No. I'm not a Pisces. I'm not. I don't want to answer the question. He didn't. The mice didn't get sent to Siberia. So apparently, I don't know. But the mice. What I just want the concept is that I'm not discussing the halacha.
Well, he was saying that's mysterious. He was saying, they were asking on him, like, how
they weren't asking him
not?
Because they were asking his asinus. You know, that's not what they were asking. They were asking him, how did he, was he able to do it? How did he get up the guts to knowing that the KGB was spying on him, how did he have the audacity to do such a thing? That was the question they were asking. And he was got upset with them that there's such a thing called you have commitment and you push yourself. Anyway, the basic point I'm trying to say, I'm beating around the bush a lot, is that there's a midah called Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh is that you're committed. You have a goal and almost like nothing stops you. It doesn't make a difference, you know. It snows, it's raining, kiddos climbs on top of the roof, you know, to hear the Torah. You have your goal, and even if it's inconvenient, and even if it's difficult, and even if there's going to be a problem, you keep at it. You keep going. You don't quit. You just keep going on what you're focused on. Now, obviously, sometimes it's your mamashi, you can't, but as much as you can. So, and that, when you person has that midah, then he, not only does he overcome hardships, but I remember they told me that Rav Chatzkel said a line that there's no yeshiva that ever closed because of lack of money. It closed because of lack of mesiras nefesh. So, when you have a goal, so you push, and you push, and you push. And then I don't want to say, you know, every rule has an exception. So please don't quote that, because there's going to be exceptions. But that's what Rav Chatzkel supposedly said. So the advantage of Mesiras Nefesh is, one is you overcome hurdles, because if you're Moser Nefesh, you're ready Moser Nefesh, so you're able to overcome the hurdle. But what it does is what Rav Zuckerman said, and that what Rav Chatzkel said, is you learn much better. Your brain, your folk, you're pushing. You're push. Every time you learn, you're more focused. You're more dedicated. Your brain is more focused on the learning. This is life and death. This is what I'm giving my life for. And so you by definition you push yourself. You're more focused in the learning, and you grow much more. So two people who are learning the same Gemara, but one person who is doing it with this feeling of Mesiras Nefesh, he's going to become much more successful.
Yeah, so I'm saying it's supposed to get us like depressed, because like Rebbe saying we don't have Mesiras Nefesh today.
But Rav Chatzkel told my father that you can do it to yourself. You didn't get him depressed. By pushing yourself. That's what Rav Chatzkel was saying, that you have to go ahead and create. It's harder. You have a harder job. It means that if you're we said to my father, you're the unlucky one. You were stuck in America. You didn't get to go to Shanghai. My father wanted to go to Europe. He really wanted to go to Europe before the war, but the war broke out. So you were unlucky. You missed out. You got stuck learning in America with all the gashmias, and therefore you didn't have the external pressures to force you to push, but you could do it to yourself. You can make the mindset. You can commit yourself. By making a mindset that no matter what, you know, even if, I'll give you an example. Rabbi Kanarik, right? Everybody knows Rabbi Kanarik. Rabbi Kanarik, I don't think he ever like missed a day in yeshiva. Even when he was sick, you know, he was always in yeshiva. So I remember once, I was talking to Rabbi Kanarik, and a guy comes over to Rabbi Kanarik to us and says, Rabbi, I have to go. I don't feel well. I can't go. Says, what's wrong? I have a cold. Says, okay, Rabbi Kanarik says, okay, refuah shleima. And then the guy leaves. Rabbi Kanarik says, he really needs it. Right. He really needs a refuah shleima. Like, you know. And they go, he has a cold. He's not. He's missing Seder because he has a cold. What's wrong with the guy? That's a refuah shleima. Yeah, you need a refuah shleima. You're right. Rabbi Kinnarik, I have the story. I can like the story. Rabbi Kinnarik had a serious operation. And he went and checked into, there was Hadassah Ein Karim, which was far out hospital. Hadassah Ein Karim is way out in the middle of nowhere. Okay, why it's out there is a big caution, but that's where they built it. They say many people died on the way to that hospital. It's out in the middle of nowhere. So he was getting the operation, Hadassah Ein Karim. And he said, that was like the only time I remember he ever missed. He checks into the hospital. The next day, he's in yeshiva. He's like, what in the world are you doing here? You're supposed to be having an operation. You checked into the hospital yesterday. He says, yeah, so yesterday they ran all the tests and they took the blood. And today's the operator, but it's not yet. And now they're not doing anything. So he said, so what, they let you check out of the hospital? He says, of course not, but my clothes is in the closet. So I took off my hospital clothes, I put on my clothes, I got on the bus, and I came to yeshiva.
You know?
He grew up in Europe. And I'm telling you that if a person wants, so that's when you have this mental attitude. That's right.
If we're not sacrificing so much to begin with.
So that's you're right. You're right. You have a problem. The Eitzah is what Rav Chasko told my father, that you got to do it to yourself. When you have a situation and you got a little cold, or you want to go out, you have a distraction, or some other things, or you have a Yetzirah, or you have a type, or you have a thing, and you give it up, and you say, no, I got to learn, and I got to push myself. So you're practicing a certain level of Mesiras Nefesh. And when it gets harder, and you give up more, and you go ahead, and you go and join Kodo, and you're living in a little teeny apartment, and you're happy with that. That's even, again, more Mr. Nevin. You go ahead and you do whatever you know.
Should we be focusing on precious?
I didn't say you should intentionally make it hard for yourself, but when the situations come up, and you make those decisions to do it, you should realize you're not just learning an extra 5 minutes. It's changing your whole mental attitude, and it's going to change your whole learning. You have a Nisayan. The guy, you have this cold, right? Take this example. It's not really the right example. And you could either push yourself to learn, or you're tired. Right? You didn't get a good night's sleep, so you're tired. So you could push yourself to learn, or you could go to sleep, or you could go leave early. So sometimes you go out to sleep, because sleep is for your health. I'm not. But sometimes, whatever. So if you stay that extra half hour and learn, so what did you gain? So you say, well, I gained that half hour. Says, no, you gained a whole different mindset. You gained the mindset that I'm Meiser Nefesh for learning. I told this to the guys, and I know I got to get carried away, that there are some people that they have to be, that they're friendly with every single person in the yeshiva. Now, a person must have friends. You have to have friends. If you don't have friends, it's very unhealthy. We don't want you in yeshiva. It's not healthy. A person needs to have friends. El chavrusa o misusa. But you don't have to be fresh. With every single hack in the yeshiva, you have to know. There was a guy in the yeshiva in my days, I assume, that if I needed to know anything, I would ask him. He knew every guy that was getting engaged, every guy that was having everything. He knew before the people knew himself. He knew what job, well, everyone that was leaving. You know, you don't have to be that guy. You can be the last guy to know. You know, everyone else knew he got engaged. I didn't know. I come home, and my wife said, oh, I heard so-and-so got engaged. Oh, I don't know. I mean, you don't know. I don't know. How am I supposed to know? I'm busy learning, right? You know, so you can be the guy who doesn't know what's going on. You don't have to know all the gossip. You don't have to be on every hack. You know, so that's part of a serious nefesh. You just sit and learn. And when you do that, you end up growing so much more it's not just the time that you're saving when everyone's sitting in the dining room hacking and waste, and you're not hacking. Your whole learning is different because everyone has a Yetzirah. Sure, I love to know all the gossip, and I love to be schmooze when the guys are having a three-hour schmooze at night about who knows what, about whether you should get drunk at Ein Bein, right? But I love to be there. But instead, I'm sitting the base manager and learning. But when you do that, so besides gaining the 3 hours of learning, you gain an attitude that I'm Meiser Nefesh for Torah. Okay, I know. Yes, I know. We always say, okay, so obviously you have to be careful.
So like,
I don't know, it's a little hard to tell that because Meiser Nefesh is a pretty high bar.
Okay, you're right. You're right.
Is a pretty high bar?
Yes.
So if I'm starting to feel the heat, isn't that a sign that it's good? So like.
Okay. I don't know. I get in trouble. I can't answer that. I'm trying. You gotta use your seichel. That there's a certain amount that you can put. Obviously, you push yourself beyond a certain point, it's not healthy. But there's a certain point that you could push yourself. Right, if the guy has 103 fever, I don't think you should come to yeshiva. First of all, he's going to get me sick. I don't want him in the yeshiva.
Is that shayach this year that people are going to really push too hard that it's not healthy?
Yes, it is shayach. So that's
an example.
That's actual
concern. A real example, not staying up till 3 in the morning.
Staying up till 3 in the morning, a good example. You don't push on the expense of sleep. Sleep is something, sleep is, I don't know, sleep is not.
Eating 3 times a week is not healthy.
Sleep is, people need their sleep for their mental health. I don't know, I told you, Zeres Nevesh is when your friends are hacking, are sitting around, and you're in the diet, and they're singing, and then there's an interesting schmooze going on, or something exciting happening,
Is that a baby
there's a lot of things like that that come up all the time, and when you create, thereby you create a mindset. You ain't looking at me. If you're going to stay up to 3 o'clock in the morning, that's not healthy, and then you, that's where the guys can get when you're if you're gonna become a nervous mashugana.
As a club, mamish never pushing the expense of sleep. What if it's Thursday night behind the Makia? I don't know.
There's never no cloud, but sleep. That's the one thing I'm nervous about because there were people that got messed up because they didn't sleep. Whatever. I'll talk to you privately. I don't want to answer the question. We talk about people burnout and trouble. The only time I ever saw in all my years in yeshiva guys who burned out is with the guys who did not sleep. I never suffered any other problem. All they talk about burnout. But I only saw guys burn out because guys who didn't sleep. I don't know, but that so the Maisha, I'm very nervous about the guys not sleeping. I'm very nervous about that. But the other things, I never saw a guy burn out because the other people, he gave up a basketball game, he gave up a schmooze.
In the base manager to learn and take one of the chills, and not staying up late.
Obviously, you have to know yourself. Because you got to be happy. You can't jump at one. But yes, that's a form of a serious.
That was just like being a starter. I'm saying the guy can learn all of being a starter.
Obviously, it depends on the guy. That's a form. You have to know yourself.
Why should it depend on the guy? Shouldn't that guy try to?
Because if you're going to be down. And you only succeed in learning if you're happy. You're pushing yourself to a point which is not good, which you're going to cause yourself not to be happy, even though you might not burn out, but you'll be not going to succeed in learning because you won't be happy.
I'm sure the people in Europe weren't happy. They ate 3 meals a week.
Nonetheless,
they learned. They learned. They push themselves.
The yeshiva goes in and serves cake break. Now, we could go ahead and sit and learn and not eat cake break. Rabbi Kanarik did not go to cake break. But I think that that makes you guys happy. It makes me happy. I get a nice piece of cake. I get a nice muffin. It makes me happy. So I think it helps my learning.
Why is it taking off 2 minutes from learning.
And I'm eating a piece of cake.
Very didn't
and
give
I'm also
the 2 minutes,
schmoozing with
wouldn't.
The guys at Buster's Tire. And they would hack me about anything, right? So so it's okay, but there are certain things. You have to use your seichel. I don't know. The answer, but the concept. You're getting.
Anything that a person
a guy has to have seichel. But the seichel is it's just saying that there. Obviously, you got to be happy, and you got to be healthy. And you need breaks, and you need happiness,
and
we need camping trips, because they're all very important. They make guys happy, and that's very important. But at the same time, you need a certain amount of mysterious nefesh, and you need to make up.
Rebbe's not saying that without Shavane less Gashmias.
I'm not saying Shavane less Gashmias.
Rebbe's just saying build up a Chelech
HaMoser. You should be saying, you should go ahead, and you should be prepared that when you get married, and even if it's going to be hard, and you know,
moving down to like random places.
Okay, that's also that could be in your brain. You're making this, but it doesn't have to start when you're in 10, 15 years now. Different levels start now. You make them in your brain that certain level where.
But let's say just an example. I want to start waking up 10 minutes early. So what should I
do? Oh, that's a good idea. Wake up early. But we should have someone to make a coffee for the guy. Shouldn't be too much mysterious to have. Okay, because you're right. There's two opposite hashgafas at the same time. One is you have to train yourself to have mesiras nefesh, and two, you have to make sure you're happy and make sure you're healthy. So they're right, there's a little bit of a stira. And that's right, that's why life is complicated. There is a stira. Trying to be happy means I have to go ahead and indulge in my cake. And having to be happy means I have to battle sometimes. And I have to schmooze with my friends. I said, you must have friends. You have to be happy, because if you're not happy, you won't learn well. Because your brain.
What do you mean by being happy? In Shanghai, they weren't happy with Gashmias lives.
They were able to be happy learning because they were tzaddikim and they could be happy learning. But by us, we're not such tzaddikim.
So we need a camping trip to make us happy.
If a person will never have cake, if a person will stop eating.
We have to know yourself that we're not.
A person can change his teva.
I don't think yet. I think we have to do both. But that's called being a smart. You have to make yourself happy, and keep yourself happy, and do what you need to be happy, and go ahead and be healthy. But at the same time, there's a certain and then to a certain yes.
So what is the definition of serious nefesh? Rebbe saying serious nefesh is doing something that's hard for you and it's not easy for you. That definition makes you not happy. So I'm saying
it depends. You have to have at one end. There's certain times that you have to worry about your health. And there's certain times you have to worry about yourself, happiness. But there's certain times not. If I have this cold and I'm going to push myself to learn, but even if it's difficult, it's not going to destroy my happiness. If I go ahead and the guys are schmoozing and I'm going to stay in the basement and not join that hack, it might not ruin my happiness. If it does ruin my happiness, then I should join the schmooze. I have to know myself. You know, sometimes
the whole point of Masur Snefesh is to try to push yourself.
You have to know yourself a little bit. You got to be honest with yourself. If I'm not going to be, if I see I'm getting a little bit down, Then you should take two chocolate bars.
Doesn't Mr. Yusuf start when it gets hard? When a person feels down, that's when it starts.
I didn't say when you feel down.
No, when he feels straining himself.
I didn't say down. When you feel strained. Strain and down are not the same thing. Strain and down are not the same thing. When you're feeling down, you should cheer yourself up. because we're not great enough to cheer yourselves up with Torah. When you're cheering down, you take two chocolates, you can go bath a little bit, get some fresh air, walk around the block, go to the public. But when you're not feeling down, you're just difficult. You're something you're giving up a little bit. You're pushing yourself. That's healthy.
You can also push yourself not to go to cake break anymore. Okay. You're used to it.
But at the so you have to know.
Rabbi, at Sir Ladavar is a person in a gym, right? He's picking up weights. And it's
are you agreeing with me or disagreeing?
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
Oh, good. Someone's not agreeing with me.
I just want to get clarity. A person's in a gym. He's getting strained every time he's picking up his weight. But he knows that this thing will make him stronger at the end of the day. So in a time, it's painful and it hurts.
And but he's also happy.
But
he feels good about
it.
And it, right, he feels good and he's happy. But if he's not going to be happy, I don't think he should do it.
I'm saying, but also what Rebbe suggests for guys to actually mechazik what they believe in, meaning the guy in the gym, when he's picking up his weights, he knows I'm going to be this muscular dude that can pick up stuff, I'm going to look good, et cetera, whatever it is. So too.
Why do you want to look good? Okay.
Never mind.
You're bad boss respect. By conservatively elegant.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I mean,
so therefore they should be mechazik in what they believe in, and that.
Okay, what do you say? I've been working. Can you help me out? Oh, see that? All right. You ready to sign up for the 14-year program? I remember I was once at one of the Purim plays, and they were talking about, and one of the line was, they don't call this rabbinical cemetery for nothing. A 14-year program. It's all the way to Ad Mea Veesrim.
I think what you need now is a chazara.
All right, okay. I don't know. It's too much Mesirat Nefesh for me. I get a hot.